Mr. David Stackman, welcome.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. Hey, thank you very much for coming on. Boy, I've been a fan for a long time, my friend.
Well, thank you very much. A lot of interesting things to talk about right now.
I'd say you're correct. Your new book, we don't want to forget that.
Yes, I appreciate you bringing it up. It's called The Great Deformation, The Corruption of Capitalism in America. And it's really about how, over the last 40 or 50 years, we wandered into this gigantic mess that we're in today of huge money printing at the Fed, massive and growing federal debt, an economy and financial system that's been turned into a huge gambling casino, a Main Street economy that is struggling and stumbling and failing to gain traction because we're just carrying too much debt. I lay out in it how over from 1980 to the present, we had a massive rolling, what I call national LBO in our economy. In 1980, total credit market debt, which would include households, business, finance, and government, everything together, was about $5 trillion. It was 1.5 times GDP, kind of a decent, stable leverage ratio for the national economy. Had been there 100 years. Fast forward to 14, we're at $59 trillion of credit market debt. It's at 3.5 times GDP. We've got two extra turns of debt, which sounds maybe not that alarming, but it actually amounts to $30 trillion more of debt on households, business, government, the financial system that the economy is lugging today relative to the prudent and sober leverage ratios we had historically. So you wonder why Larry Summers and the other unreconstructed Keynesians stand around most days sucking their thumb, wondering why the economy is not getting liftoff or escape velocity. Well, the answer is we had a 30-year Keynesian debt spree, and now we're done. The credit market channel is busted and done. The Fed is spinning its wheels. It's just funding liquidity into what I call the Wall Street gambling channel, which is zero-cost money for, you know, carry traders and short-run gamblers who play the system as long as the Fed can keep it going.
David,
so it's a real mess. It is a, a travesty on what free market capitalism should be all about.
David,
and we can blame it on a policy that has gone wrong now for decade after decade.
Well, how does it, I first of all, I agree with everything you say, which we're supposed to be arguing, but no, I agree with everything you say.
okay.
I mean, John and I have talked about it. Hi, John. Dr. J just wandered in. When did we, on a very base level, across the entire, certainly the news media board, and I think the Economist board as well. I mean, to me, building wealth is making $100 a week and living on 80.
Right.
Somehow we're so far past that living wealth now is bubbles, market going up, housing going up. I don't know that there's even people around now that even remember that this is not the way to do it. I mean, it seems like this is so much in the fabric now. I don't know how you turn the bus back. I really don't.
Well, I think that's very hard, and that's the danger. This isn't like a fixable problem that we've been off base for a couple of years or some big legislative error has been made in Washington. I think we've had a policy drift for 30 or 40 years going all the way back to Nixon in 1971 when he went to Camp David with all his free market economists. And he came back with wage and price controls, defaulting on our Bretton Woods obligations to keep the dollar good as gold, and launched us on what he called a Keynesian fiscal stimulus. As you remember, he said we're all Keynesians now. Well, year after year, decade after decade, one step at a time, we layered more and more of that, erroneous thinking on the policy wagon. It really got bad, I think, after Volcker was forced out of office. He was a great hero in my view because he tried to slow down the drift towards disaster. But then we got Greenspan. Greenspan made up a whole new monetary doctrine. I call it Keynesian central banking. The idea is if we could just force enough debt into the credit channel, households, business, government, you could make GDP grow more rapidly, employment end up higher. In other words, the Monetary Politburo, as I call it, at the FOMC, could outperform what the free market is supposed to do on its own. I think that was an error. It started us down the road of this debt binge, and that's why we now struggle with $59 trillion. I think it's important to recognize that the credit channel of monetary transmission, which is what the Fed has relied on ever since the Greenspan era got going, is busted and done. Households still have debt of nearly $13 trillion, nearly 180% of wage and salary income. That's double where it started in 1980. And they're not going to borrow more. They're going to borrow less over time. We're not going to get extra growth on the cheap through borrowing on top of the income we earn. Same with business. People don't realize that when Greenspan finally got the party going in 1994, business in the United States, corporate and non-corporate, had about $3 trillion of debt. By the time we reached the peak in 2007, it was $11 trillion. And we haven't deleveraged since. It's now $13.5 trillion. Business is borrowing money in the bond market hand over fist, but it's all going into financial engineering, stock buybacks, M&A deals, LBOs. None of it is really on the margin of this massive borrowing.
Is it possible
going into productive assets? So the business channel is broken as well, and we can say the same thing about the public debt.
David, is it more sinister? John and I have talked a long time. Is it possible that it's even more sinister than you're talking about? It seems like every time this happens, there's a huge change in what I would consider to be wealth from some people to others. I mean, the disaster with the Resolution Trust, I mean, made instant millionaires out of new people and took a lot of money from other people. And this, I mean, I've listened to you talk on CNBC where Jan is a contributor the other day, and this the thing that really frosts me more, I don't really hear it much on TV, this 7-8 years of zero interest rate, my clients are mostly retired people. You're eviscerating these people with a zero. Go ahead.
Yes, exactly. If you put this before the Congress to vote, because it's really a fiscal policy, 7 years of zero interest rates is crushing the savers. It's a huge transfer of wealth from the retired population, the saving population, what is left of it, to the banking system and ultimately out into the what I call the financial casino.
Is that
it amounts to $400 or $500 billion a year. If we had free market, honest interest rates determined by supply and demand and not pegged and manipulated and capped by the Fed, $400 or $500 billion a year would flow to savers, and $400 or $500 billion less would be available in the banking and what I call speculative
system. You don't know how happy.
So if you put that to a vote in Congress, how many votes would you get? You would be laughed out of Capitol Hill because even they would know better. But we have a Monetary Politburo, as I call it, 12 members of the FOMC, who in their wisdom determine that interest rates on liquid short-term funds should be zero, and that if you want to be able to support yourself in retirement, go out and buy some junk bonds, go out and buy the Russell 2000 at 1200 after it's up 250%, and that's what your job is because we've so decreed. Now, I think that is a terrible situation, and it's just part of what I call the great deformation.
Well, How do they get away with it? By the way, your number of $400 billion, I went through as best I could with the numbers I have. I came up with $350 billion. I'm flattering myself that I'm close to yours.
I came up with that about too. I was just rounding for simplicity purposes. But the point is, it's a massive transfer that wouldn't occur in an honest market where you didn't have the Fed with its big fat thumb on every interest rate from the overnight all the way through the 30-year, which is exactly where it is today.
How are they? Can I ask a very specific question? I don't want John to pipe in. When they do this, and you probably know this, because I cannot find anybody who's been able to tell me, because, I mean, John and I are former traders on the floor, so there's a lot of the moves the Fed makes just on the general end that I think, you look at. John and I look at, not only are they in the market more than they ought to be, But everybody they trade with essentially turns out to be a front run. I mean, if they're buying bonds during the day, I mean, guess what? Goldman Sachs is going to buy them ahead of them and sell them to them at a higher price. I mean, it's no wonder these guys make money thousands of days in a row. But how, when they go out and buy these mortgages, who are they buying them from? What are they paying? How do they actually do it? Do you know that?
Sure. Well, I mean, mainly they're open market operations, so-called, are conducted through what are called the primary dealers.
I'm talking about the mortgage part.
Of course, it is one of the greatest, gifts ever given to Wall Street, because the Fed is telling you exactly, don't worry about the cost of carry, your repo, your overnight money that you fund your positions with, because we have it locked at 5 basis points, and it's going to stay there, honest to goodness, through 2015 or even beyond, going all the way back to December 2008. So they've been telling the carry traders for 7 years running, your cost of goods, which is what a trader, the cost of goods for a trader is his carry on the asset position he's holding, is zero. It is pegged at that point by the central bank, and we're going to keep it there. You can sleep at night and put on whatever positions you can think of. If you think you ought to be in Australian dollars, get in them. If you ought to be long the RMB and short the yen, get into that. We're going to keep the market peg. We're going to keep your cost of carry and your cost of production at zero.
I was talking more about it.
It is simply causing the whole world market to turn itself into a gambling casino, where all the smart people and all the talent and all the raw technology power is being directed to finding, what I call places to extract rent or spreads to capture in this carry trade that is sponsored.
How are they buying the mortgage piece of it, though? I mean, who are they buying those from? Individual banks?
Same thing. Everything that they buy is through the primary dealers.
Are they buying mortgage chunks from people in Europe and in Dubai?
Well, it's all indirect, because the primary dealers know what their buying agenda is. You know, they publish what they're going to buy, even in what the CUSIP numbers are and so forth each day. So, obviously, as the primary dealers see what the buying agenda of the Fed is, they load up the wagon by buying them a little cheaper in the market, and then when the Fed comes out with its tender, sell them at a little higher price, capture the spread, laugh all the way to the bank, and praise high heaven the wondrous work of the Federal Reserve. I mean, this is entirely a corrupt system. And you have to get to the heart of it, which is the massive open market operations of the Fed. It was never intended to do that in 1914 when the Fed was created, and yet decade by decade over the years, we've turned it into a national, monetary planning agency that totally controls and dominates the market.
Well, John, what do you think of all this?
Sure. And David, thanks for joining us. His book, by the way.
Happy to be on with you, John. You have great insight about the market. I always like to listen to you.
Please, sir. I enjoy you on whatever program I see you on. So thank you for sharing today. And, folks, his book, The Great Deformation, is available on Amazon. Matt will make sure he gets a link out there again to the book. Great read, going all the way back, Great Depression, and before that even, with the formation of the Federal Reserve and so forth. Now, you're obviously at odds with somebody like Paul Krugman, who says that Yellen and Bernanke haven't done nearly enough, that they should throw even more money at this particular problem and, like Chief said, steal more from the widows and orphans and anybody else living on fixed income. When you have had opportunities, Mr. Stockman, to be on or to opine against some of the opinions that Krugman has thrown out there, what would you say the one or two points that you'd always go after him on? Would it be, like you said, have said so far eloquently in this interview, that it would be that the Fed has overstepped its bounds already, and to push this further would be even more ludicrous? Or, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but what would you say would be the one or two points, at least, without the 100 others, that you'd push back against Krugman on?
Well, I think the heart of it would be you can't borrow your way to prosperity. That has been a Keynesian illusion for decades and decades. We started only on the fiscal side, but then they discovered during the Greenspan reign that it was even easier to promote a massive expansion of borrowing on the margin in all sectors of the economy through the Federal Reserve and through manipulation of interest rates and cheap money and the Greenspan put and the wealth effects doctrine. And then we stumbled, obviously, into ZERP and QE and all the rest of it. So that is the heart of it. Somehow Krugmans of the world believe that capitalism always fails, that the free market will fall on its face and drop into an economic black hole unless it is constantly managed, manipulated, propped up, and, stimulated by the wiser men who sit on the, and women who sit on the Federal Reserve or operate fiscal policy in Washington. That's the heart of the matter. Do you believe that the state, through its central planning agency and through its fiscal tools, can do a better job than the market? I totally dispute that. I think history shows that we've now turned the central bank, the Federal Reserve, into a serial bubble machine. And Tom was mentioning that earlier. We're in the fourth bubble created by the central bank since the late 80s. And each time the bubble busts, and then the fast money scoops in at the bottom, buys up the stuff cheap, has a great ride up the next bubble, is smart enough to get out just as the retail investor is being called back into the slaughter, and we go through it again and again. This is no way to run an honest free market capitalist system, but that's what the Krugmans of the world, that's what basically the mainstream policy believes.
David,
we're in a huge, I think, John, recency bias where we take for granted in the daily narrative things that 20 or even 15 years ago would have been thought crazy. 15 years ago, 2000, would anybody think you could go 7 years from the top of a cycle, which was December 2007, to today, and have capital spending down $100 billion or 8% in real terms, while at the same time you've taken the balance sheet of the Fed from $900 billion to $4.5 trillion? Would anybody think that's possible? Would anybody have thought we'd keep interest rates in the short market at zero for 5 years and counting to seven? None of this was even considered remotely logical or feasible or prudent as recently as 15 years ago, but listen to the narrative today, and it's par for the course, so maybe we should be doing a little more, and it's what you mentioned in your question about Krugman. If we'd only done more, it all would have worked. Well, I call that the counterfactual fallacy. In other words, just say the reason it failed is we didn't do enough. You can't prove it. Logic may refute it. But go ahead and assert it, because that's essentially what, you know, the mainstream Keynesian argument is today.
David, well, where do they get, I mean, a lot of this comes from, and Greenspan, or not Greenspan, Bernanke was considered the genius and the Great Depression and social, and I don't begin to have the PhDs that he does, but I've read a few books without pictures. I don't know that their read of this whole thing, how they would have redone the Great Depression, I'm not so sure that they're right. I mean, where do they get the Larry Summers of the world and the Paul Krugman? Where is the base of knowledge? Where's the example? Where's the economy at any time that shows that the way they're going about it works? I don't think in the Great Depression, if you would have poured money back into the system. I mean, obviously the classic cause for the Depression was they let the money supply drop 20% in 6 months or whatever. Now, if you'd have popped that back up, I'm not so sure if you didn't get the money back to the people who lost it in the banks, you just would have flooded the system and you wouldn't have done much good anyway. Same like we're doing here. We're pouring money in. We've helped everybody with this mortgage thing except the poor guy who had the house. We've managed to pour money at everybody else on earth except that guy.
You've hit it on the nail on the head. I have several chapters in the Great Deformation about the myths of the Great Depression, about what really happened from 1914 through 1933, and whether the Fed caused the problem and when it caused the problem. And I say the conventional wisdom is upside down and wrong. Bernanke is a phony scholar of the Great Depression. What he asserts, that the Fed did not open the spigots wide enough in 1930 through 1932, is clearly wrong. There was no liquidity shortage. Interest rates were practically zero. There were huge excess reserves that built up in the system. And I'll just give you a number to make things a little empirical here. When the crash occurred in October 1929, there was about $40 million of excess reserves in the system. By 1933, as Roosevelt ambled into town, there was $500 or $600 million of excess reserves. That's a measure that money wasn't too tight. What caused the Great Depression was the aftermath of the carnage, economic carnage of World War One, and the destruction of the gold standard that occurred as a result of that, the huge buildup of debts in all the European countries, and the excess size of the American export market that temporarily became the granary and arsenal to the world. And then in the 1920s, we compounded that with easy money at the Fed and a huge explosion in the foreign bond market that allowed us to loan money to everybody from Brazil to the municipality of Hamburg. They bought U.S. exports. It created a temporary boom in the world. It came to an end when the stock market crashed, the foreign bond market crashed, foreigners couldn't borrow, our exports dwindled by 80%, and the economy had to go through a big correction from a boom that wasn't sustainable due to war and money printing. Now, that's the real cause. It had nothing to do with the evils or inherent shortcomings of capitalism. It had nothing to do with Hoover trying to balance the budget, and it certainly had nothing to do with the argument that people were so benighted then they didn't know how to get out the Keynesian tools. But we have that huge myth about the Great Depression. Bernanke simply dusted it off in September 2008, said we're facing Great Depression 2.0, which was totally a lie. Nothing remotely like that was staring us in the face. It was a short liquidation of inventory and labor. But nevertheless, he played the Great Depression card, claimed that he was the great scholar, panicked everybody in Washington into these, massive bailouts and this money printing spree, and the whole thing was wrong. And that's why I wrote the book, to try to refute the urban legends that were created in a matter of a few days.
Dave, we don't have much time. If there's one, what could we possibly do? I mean, obviously you've written a terrific book. I mean, Jan and I try and come out a station and talk about it. Boy, talk about a thimble in Lake Michigan. What can we do can anybody do to turn this bus around? The knowledge is not there. The will doesn't appear to be there. I don't even know what step one would be.
I think, unfortunately, and this is the bad news of it, about it, you're going to have a major financial conflagration, a huge breakdown of this whole worldwide central bank driven bubble that has inflated over the last few years and even decades. And until we get a dramatic, painful demonstration that this doesn't work, that it is simply caused a huge overstating of values in financial asset prices, and that we got a runaway asset inflation, not goods inflation, until the world can see that, the people who are in charge are going to keep doing the same thing and double down if the results don't meet their promises. There is no way that we're going to suddenly get enlightened. There's no candidate riding in on a white horse somewhere who's got it all figured out for 2014 or 2016. You're going to have a thundering financial breakdown that will make September 2008 look like a Sunday school picnic, and only then will people begin to say, you were lying, you were wrong, you were leading us down a primrose path of economic principles that are totally non-sustainable. After all, if we could print our way to prosperity, which is what we're trying to do, what is $55 billion a month of bond buying other than just printing money and absorbing assets? If that was so easy, then why should we pay taxes? Let's just borrow the whole thing. Why should people work? Why don't we just get a fleet of helicopters and drop money every Thursday afternoon at 3 o'clock? And that would be the way we run the economy. Well, obviously that's absurd, but that's exactly in a exaggerated form what the Fed is trying to tell us is possible.
The only problem with the conflagration part is that the guys who caused it will be back at some massively endowed university getting paid, and all the other people will be hurt.
Yeah, I agree. That's the problem. Because here we have it again. You know, after the third bubble collapse of the last two decades in 2008, which was traumatic, and we saw the Russell 2000 drop from 800, I think, at the peak in October 07 to 350, and people just get smoked and have their 401ks denuded and destroyed, they said, we're not, never again, we're not coming back in. And as the bubble then was reflated by the Fed beginning in March 2009, year after year, you know, the Main Street investor, the little guy, said, I'm not going to fall for it again. And they just kept inflating the indices. The Russell 2000 a couple of days ago was at 1,200, up 250%. And, you know, the little guy is now being invited to come into the water again. It's nice and warm. The market's not overvalued. Sure, it's trading at 85 times trailing, you know, Russell 2000 earnings, but don't worry about that. Get in, because this time is different. And unfortunately, the small guy, it looks like, based on, you know, flows, fund flows, is falling for it at exactly the moment when the fractures are beginning to appear in the system.
Well,
China, Japan, half
of 1% in the bank,
and everywhere else.
Half of 1% in the bank doesn't look so hot, and you still, and you have people saying that.
I know.
You know,
and of course, that's what you hear every day on you know, what I call bubble vision, and that is okay. The market may be frothy, but what's your alternative? Well, what kind of central banking policy and system forces people to gamble against any reasonable odds as the best alternative available? That would not occur, I insist strongly, in an honest free market in the financial system where savers met borrowers at the price juncture and the market cleared based on what people really wanted to save and borrow. And not what the what
David,
the
you can sure tell that those guys are, have never been money managers, because as a money manager, and John knows this for sure, is that you can't ever jump. I mean, if I'm managing your dad's money, I can't jump him from a safe investment to chase for 6%. I just can't do it, regardless of what the Fed tells me to do. I mean,
yeah, I know. And so what they're doing is saying, for your prudence and for your sobriety and for your wisdom from experience, you are going to be penalized with 40 basis points of return on liquid funds in a world where the inflation rate officially is 2%. The real inflation rate's probably higher. And besides that, you're going to pay taxes on top.
Sounds like you're
now
a fan.
That's really what they're telling you. And somehow we have a daily narrative on all the financial, you know, TV and elsewhere, media, saying, well, this is just exactly what, you know, the Fed ought to be doing. That
sounds
yen
like
is going to slowly work her way out of this corner that the Fed has painted.
David, we're going to have to let you go, bud, but it sounds like you're a fan of Caddyshack, like the judge. You'll get nothing and like it to savers.
Right, okay. Yeah, something like that. The point is, we can't stand any more of what we're getting. That's my point.
Well, I
hope that soon the American public starts to wake up and pounds the table and says we don't like it.
Yeah, I'm waiting for that day too. But I get, you know, when you talk about the conflagration.
Oh, you're starting to see some
of
that,
a little
though,
bit, yeah.
Because I mean, there's an awful lot of folks who, just as David and you've been saying, Chief, look at it and say, okay, you've helped out the bankers, you've helped out, you know, these institutions. What about me? It's not, you
right.
know, borrowing is still very limited, no matter what anybody else says. Borrowing's very difficult for Joes and Janes, and without them getting any benefit and their parents having all their money, you know, confiscated more or less by these zero interest rate policies, you have a pretty big backlash coming eventually.
Yeah, Yeah, I agree with that. You know, one number, we mentioned many, but the return of interest to the economy is about $400 billion lower than it was before they went into this zero interest
David,
rate policy.
David, it's one hell of a lot of
out of the hide.
It's one hell of a lot of roofs and new refrigerators for a lot of retired people that had a fully paid for house and thought they were on Easy Street, and now they're not. And, David, reserve the right to invite you back. It was a lot of fun.
Okay, very good. Enjoyed talking to you. Thank you.
The great deformation, the corruption of capitalism in America, now it's available at Amazon. It's also available at our buddies at Better World Books, Jen, where Kevin works in Indiana.
And you can also check out Mr. Stockman's blog, yes. DavidStockmansContraCorner.com.